Tomorrow is the birthday anniversary of that delightful entertainer, Gracie Fields. Gracie would have been 85 tomorrow. And to mark the occasion, we're going to play you some excerpts from a recording put out in tribute to Gracie Fields by the British Broadcasting Corporation, taking recordings from their own sound archives. Records introduced by Stanley Holloway, and it begins with Gracie singing the song which became her theme.
Stanley, Stanley, marry me, Stanley, and happy forever.
Of course, was Gracie Fields singing the song Sally, which had become a kind of signature tune for her. There she was singing to a capacity audience in her special Ensor Gala show at the Royal Albert Hall in 1941. She had come a long way by then and was recognized as a great star of show business. I never knew anyone with a greater communication with an audience than Gracie Fields. But offstage, Gracie was quite a shy person. She was never quite sure whether she could still give 100%. But as we all know, she did and could until the end of her days. She became an international celebrity and one of the best-loved artists of stage and screen. Let Gracie tell her story in her own words. By broadcast, she was made for the BBC. Especially in this interview she gave to John Burns in 1968.
I think everybody must know that you were born in Rochdale. Most people probably also know that you were born and christened Grace Stansfield, but I'm sure hardly anybody knows when, why, and how you became Gracie Fields.
Well, when I was a little girl and was first going on the stage, the people told some managers or somebody in Rochdale, they said, she'll never be a star with a name that long. She can't be called Gracie Stansfield or Grace Stansfield. It has to be a short name. So Mother went home and stood in and said, what shall we call it? Grace Fields? It doesn't flow proper, does it? Gracie Fields. We'll keep it like that, Gracie Fields.
Your mother was obviously interested in your own interest
in the theatre. My mother was the only pro, believe me. She was theatre mad. I couldn't be away for a week's holiday. She's sending me a telegram, get back, your public's fickle. She just was only happy when she saw you on that stage. That was her life she wanted to do and to live herself, and she never got on it, so she made sure that I stopped on it.
What was your father's attitude? Did he go along?
He didn't say anything. Mother always won the toss there, although there were many, many consultations with my mother's aunt, who was very religious, and that part of her family all saying, oh, you're sending her to the devil, Janie. You can't let her go on stage. She says, well, I don't care. She says, I think it's going to be right for our Grace. And there you are. We got on with it.
What was your life like as a child? Were you ever one of these half-timers going to school part of the day and at the middle of the rest?
Oh, yes, half-time, getting up at 6. Well, before 6, we had to be in the factory at 6 o'clock. And then you get your breakfast at 8 o'clock till half past 8. You had a half hour for your breakfast. And then back, tying all the knots again until half past 12. And then we had 1 hour for our lunch. And then back again half past 1 into the factory until half past 5 in the evening. And when I was going to school, when I was 12 years old, I did mornings for 1 week and then go to school in the afternoon and the other vice versa, the school in the mornings the next week and the factory in the afternoon.
And when did you get out of all this and get on the stage?
Well, not actually until I was really 16, but I'd been on the stage with one thing and another right up to then. I even was in a juvenile troupe from 14 to 16, with practically 2 years with this singing group. And before then I was in different juvenile troupes where I learned to dance and all the sort of acrobats of the theatre.
So when you went on the stage as a proper professional at 16, was this in a review?
It was in a review. First I started on my own, and after 4 weeks engagements on by myself, we got in a review and then went on until, well, I suppose about 30-odd years ago.
We haven't got a broadcast of her singing in review, but here she is singing to the troops in France.
The very, very early days when you started in review, started touring the north of England and the rest of the country, were those then particularly hard days touring?
They were wonderful days. We loved every minute of it. It was all theatre.
Did you know then that you were going to become a star?
I felt I had everything to become a star with everybody we saw. I knew I had much more than the majority of all the people.
I suppose you really became a star, didn't you, when you got to the West End in, what, 1923, Mr. Tower of London?
That's when they were, and then I was a star then, yeah.
It really happened.
When he come to London, but I didn't believe it. I was more interested in the group of that was working with me on the...
This was Archie Pitt's show?
Yes.
Had you married him then?
I was married when I was 25. I don't know when...
It was before or after?
So it was probably...
It was about that year, I think,
I was a star going round the provinces all the time with his shows, you see. And when we did come to London, we went to the Alhambra Theatre. That's when I was proclaimed a star. Somebody came and offered £200 a week or something. I was getting about £28, and I looked at everybody, what can I do? Can't leave my sister in this show, and I can't leave the whole crowd, everybody be out of work. So I just took my mind and said, that'll come again another day.
That was when I first heard Gracie Field sing in Mr. Tower of London. I was struck by her great versatility, both as a character actress and a singer. I learned afterwards that she not only performed on the stage at night, but in the daytime, she made the costumes and drilled the dancing girls. By the end of the 30s, she was earning as much as £50,000 for one film.
You had then, in the 30s, really become Gracie Fields, the great international star. You've gone a long, long way, hadn't you, from that fish and chip shop where you were born in Molesworth Street?
Oh, I think so, yes.
But had you changed?
I haven't changed myself. No, no. I'm still a fish and chip shop. I'm still the same person, if you know what I mean. I haven't changed myself. Because everything I do is a job, and I want to do that job well.
You've never acted like a star in the sense that you've never been apart from anybody else in the business. You've always been one of them, haven't you?
One of the folks that are in the show, yes. I'm a family girl, you see. Everybody comes in, they have to belong to me, and I want to belong to them. I've never been the kind of star that wants to go out after the show and go to be seen or go to a cabaret, because I'm always worried about my audience. If I was to go out, which I'd had to do once or twice in naturally in those days, I found my voice is very tired the next day. I can't give. That upsets me. I want every audience to go out every night to feel like I can go to bed and say, well, I did a good show tonight, and that's that.
Now, I'm going to sing a few choruses, and if you like to join in, you can do. If you don't, it doesn't matter. I'll speak to you just the same as a fool. When I grow to living here besides me. Say something.
That excerpt shows Grace's wonderful rapport with an audience and how she could do anything with them. It was recorded in France at a special show for the troops in November 1939, only 2 months after war was declared, and incredibly, only 6 months after the major operation Gracie had for cancer. She got 500,000 get-well cards and messages, including one from the Queen, now the Queen Mother. On the 30th of July, Gracie broadcast her thanks to the nation.
Hello, everybody. My goodness, but this is wonderful to be back at this old microphone again and to be able to speak to and thank all you wonderful people for the great love and affection you have shown for me during what has been the most dreadful ordeal of my 41 years. I felt something was wrong for the past 3 or 4 years, but I've been taking little short holidays and thinking to myself, well, maybe it was just a rest I needed, and saying to myself, well, really, it's impossible for a strong-hearted daughter of the North to have out wrong with her, but after completing my last film, Shipyard Sally, I said to myself, Grace, lass, they'll have to go and see a doctor. That much worse. I never dreamed, though, that it was going to be such a do as it's been. But thank heaven and Mr. Searle, my surgeon, and all those wonderful sisters and nurses at the Chelsea Women's Hospital, I've pulled through. And now I want to say thank you to all you wonderful people from all over the world who have written me such beautiful letters, and for all the lovely flowers and telegrams and countless other presents. I tell you, you've made me cry. I've been so overcome by your devotion. You see, I always thought you liked me a little bit, but I didn't think you loved me. Well, not so much anyway. My only wish now is to try and please you with my work in the future, as I seem to have done in the past.
Now I'm going to sing a little song that I sang after an illness I had in 1939. I've been asked many times to sing it, but this is the first time I've sung it since that time.
I love the moon, I love the sun, I love the forest, the flowers, the sun, I love the wild birds, oh, I love you Where is the moon? Where is the sun? Where are the forests, the flowers, the fun? There are no wild birds, no moon and no dew.
In spite of the fact that Gracie was singing to the troops only months after her illness, and although the doctors had suggested a 2-year rest, some of the press turned against her when she left Britain in 1940. You see, her life with Archie Pitt had not been a happy one, but they were finally divorced in 1939. In March 1940, Gracie married Monty Banks, her film director. But in June of the same year, Italy entered the war on the side of Germany. And it turned out that Monty Banks, whose real name was Mario Bianchi, was technically still an Italian citizen, although he had left Italy when he was a boy. Gracie describes why she decided to leave Britain with her husband.
Well, it was just during the war, we had a message from Viscount Castlereagh, who was Monty's friend. And Monty was out at the time, and he rang up and said, you must get Monty immediately to leave the country, come to Ireland immediately, but we must not go back to Italy. Well, I had arranged for my family to go to America because my mother had been sick and she'd been advised to live in a warm country. So she was already there, and I thought, well, get the children away. And I said, well, I would like to go on that boat, and you must go to America. So, and I said, I want to get on that boat by hook or crook, because I feel if they go down, I shall never live. We'll go down together if we have to go down. And so that's how it sort of happened. And then when we got to America, he went to America, and he arranged before with Lord Lloyd and Basil Dean that I should do war work and carry on just the same, which I did across Canada, and do concerts for the benefit of the War Relief and the Navy League. So he had to go to America, and I was being left behind in Canada. When we arrived in Quebec, I think it was the first, then all these Navy League officials, everybody, they said, yes, but your husband will have to be interned. And they were going to take him off and intern him in Canada. As well, if you intern him, you intern me too, because it's daft. He's going on to America. He's not staying on here anyway. And then they started. We took £10,000 worth of jewelry. There was no stoppage on it. Nobody said, have you got it or not? Anyway, when it got there, it got in the papers, it became £100,000 worth of jewelry, and then £200,000. Oh, it got ridiculous.
In spite of the bad publicity, Gracie carried on entertaining the troops and raised over £500,000 for Britain with her concerts in Canada and America. Never afraid to face the music, she came back to Britain alone in 1941 and again in 1943 and continued with her wartime concerts to enthusiastic audiences. After the war, Gracie returned once more to Britain in 1947, having traveled all over the world, and did a series of very successful radio shows entitled Gracie's Working Parties, which included local amateur talent. The first show, of course, came from our hometown of Rochdale.
Well, I've got a pretty shrewd idea what you're going to sing tonight since you're in Rochdale.
Yeah, we That's right. We have to sing the Rochdale Hunt. We've had so many requests, so we have to sing the Rochdale Hunt. All right. Come on, dogs. Come on, dogs. Little dogs and big dogs. Come on. Come on. Get on. Go on, dogs. Get on in front. Go on, all of you. Go on. Go on, dogs, little ones. Go on, get over there. Keep going. Start smelling. I've been hunting with the hounds at Rochdale. E by gum, we've got a lovely pack. Whippets and Alsatians, bulldogs and Dalmatians, horses with two legs in front and two more at the back. Off we went and made a fine display. Auntie took a fence and took it with her all the way. With the Rochdale hounds at the Rochdale Hunt, tally-ho, tally-ho. In hunting dress instead of clogs and shawl, jumping over fences and the backyard walls. Away, away, away we went with leaps and bounds. Young Maggie Higgins, who is known around our neighborhood, she had a nasty fall, but she's a saucy piece of goods. It isn't the first time Maggie has fallen when she's been in the woods. Following the Rochdale hound. Go on, dog, get on, keep going. What's the matter with you? Good morning, Lord Alphonse. It's a nice day for the meet, isn't it? Have you seen my husband, Nigel? He would be. Every time we go hunting, he will go in a pub, first of all. Joe, come out of that pub. You make me sick. You never know whether you're hunting or whether you're being hunted. Come on now, give it. Which is my horse? I told you to pick us a good one. What, that little thin horse, that there? Sandwiched between them two fat ones? Poor thing, he have a cheek. Come on, horse, stop leaning on to the two. Come on. Stand there. Now give us a leg up, Joe, and don't act the goat. I've got my thickens on. It's cowed. Oh, cheers! Go on. Hee! Oh, heck, it isn't half bony. I'll have corns when I get back and they won't be on my feet. Go on, gee up, pallet dogs. Go on, look out. Go on now. Keep going. Hey, go on. Wait a minute, horse. Wait a minute, horse. Don't go so quick. Something going wrong here. Hey, turn around. We're going wrong road. Go on.
Comedy wasn't always, was it, a part of your act?
No, it's just somebody wrote the comedy song. I do get, Craig, when I was in sketches, we used to do funny sketches. I'd play the servant girl and I'd go up the wall and crazy, and many times they'd say I was drunk, but it was just because I was just very, very tired. And when I get tired, I come out with silly things. And I suppose that's how a lot of that kind of thing happened. But I have a straightforward approach. I try to please and I try to do what I think the people would like.
When did you really realize that people would also like the moving kind of song, the emotional song, as well as the comic?
Always, really, because I had the voice for it to sell those kind of songs, and that was the easiest part of my work. The comedy songs were the more difficult, really, to make all of them sort of, but you sing them. I love to sing about somebody else in a comedy song. I don't very much like singing about myself.
Shop. All right, there's a shop called the Co-op in the High Street. By gum, it's a great idea. For out of what you spend, you get a dividend 3 times every year. When Ma gets 2 shillings for her share, she shouts, feeling like a millionaire. Stop and shop at the Co-op shop. What a shop is the Co-op shop. You can buy from a chop to a prop or a mop or a bottle of ginger pop at the Co-op shop. As the pop shop is next to the Co-op shop, when you've done your popping in the pop shop, you hop out of the pop shop and pop into the Co-op shop. A proper shop, the shop, it is a Co-op shop. They have tripe nice and ripe at the Co-op shop. Pink toast, powder puffs, pork pies, paraffin and jam, carbolic soap and ham, clothes, fegs and glass eyes, and pig's heads all grinning in a row. Will you join in this chorus, sweet and low? Sweet and low, sweet and low. Wind over the waves. It's all right, I heard him play it wrong tune. It's all right. The sea floor. It's all right, he can stop another fortnight. Blow, breeze and blow. Wind over. What's the matter with you?
You're singing the wrong song, my dear lady.
Who's singing it wrong song?
You're singing sweet and low. This is a co-op shop.
I'm not singing sweet and low. I'm singing the co-op shop. Don't act, Dad.
Well, it sounds like sweet and low to me. I'm sure it's sweet and low.
I think you must be going potty, really. I was singing the co-op shop. I mean, Leslie, come here, Leslie Paul. What was I singing, the co-op shop or sweet and low?
You were singing sweet and low.
I was singing sweet and low? I'll smack your face, both of you.
Sweet and low.
Both of you. You both still singing sweet and low. Well, I'm terribly sorry. It's 2-1, so if I was singing sweet and low, I apologize. It must be my classical brain running away with me. Stop and shop at the co-op, at the co-op shop. What a shop is the co-op. The co-op shop. You can buy from a chop to a prop for a mop or a bottle of ginger pop at the co-op. In a book, a food, a pot. In a book, a book, a book, a book. Non ma po, la pip ma di, la ra ta ta. Oh, 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 oh. La 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 la
Did you ever think of developing your voice even further into an opera singer? Because I remember reading somewhere that the great Tetrazzini once asked you to sing an aria from La Traviata, and why didn't you become an opera singer?
It was too late. And I'm glad I didn't now, because I think I've given many more people enjoyment than probably an opera singer, and I had more fun myself doing it.
Did you ever have singing lessons of any kind?
No.
None at all?
No. I just pray to the Lord before I go on every night and just hope for the best and make a little noise. All right, we'll go on. Go on.
What of all your songs is the greatest song? The song that perhaps has done most for you, or means...
That I like to listen to myself.
Well, of your own songs?
I have my songs recordings. I don't sort of listen to Sally, and I don't listen to the Aspidistra. But I listen to things like Angels Guard Thee, and some of those good classic songs I've sung, you know, semi-classic, that I'm rather surprised when I hear them now, and I think, well, it was a voice. It was something that was a bit out of this world, but I didn't realize I had it. I didn't realize then. I realize now.
Up in the garret, away from the din, someone is playing an old violin. Tenderly, pleadingly, all the notes. Out of the year, rapture and agony, laughter and tears, tenderly, pleadingly, playing an old violin.
I'm going to say very little indeed about an artist whose voice symbolizes everything that is best and most loved in that great national possession of ours. I welcome, on your behalf and with all my heart, the greatest lady of the variety stage. I need only say two words more. Our Gracie.
Beggar or king, you've got
I have to be up to date, so I'm right up to date. I'm going to sing the Mockingbird Hill. When the sun in the morning peeps over the hill and kisses the roses on my windowsill, then my heart fills with sadness when I hear the trill of the birds in the trees of the Mockingbird Hill. Shalala, twiddly-dee-dee, it gives me a thrill to wake up in the morning to the mockingbird's trill. Shalala, twiddly-dee-dee, there's peace and goodwill. You're welcome as the flowers on Mockingbird Hill. Got a three-cornered plow and an acre to till, and a mule that I bought for a $10 bill. There's a tumble-down shack and an old rusty mill, but it's my home sweet home up on Mockingbird Hill. Cha-la-la, twiddly-dee-dee, it gives me a thrill to wake up in the morning to the mockingbird's trill. Cha-la-la, twiddly-dee-dee, there's peace and goodwill. You're welcome as the flowers on Mockingbird Hill. When it's late in the evening, I climb up the hill and survey all my kingdom when everything's still. Only me and the sky and an old whippoorwill singing songs in the twilight on Mockingbird Hill.
Betrayal, and the acting was divine. It's the best film that they've had for years down at the Hippodrome, and it's a good job I took my handkerchief with me when I left home. Oh, it was a lovely picture, and I did enjoy it so. Oh, I never cried so much in all my life. When the villain seized the maiden, everybody shouted, oh. Oh, I never cried so much in all my life. He told her that he'd wed her, then enticed her on his yacht. Then he got her tied up in a proper sailor's knot. Then he kissed her twice, the dirty dog, upon her beauty spot. Oh, I never cried so much in all my life. It takes a lot to make me cry, but oh dear, when I start and think of what that girl went through, I'm like a water cat. I see her eyes, I hear her voice at night when I'm in bed, and here's the scene I'll never, never get out of my head. As she faced the blinding snowstorm and came trudging through the town. Oh, I never cried so much in all my life. Oh, and when I saw her carrying her baby upside down. Oh, I never cried so much in all my life. She lingered near the Rose and Crown. The wind was howling wild. When up the village street there came the father of her child. So she tapped him for a tanner for a pint of old and mild. Oh, I never cried so much in all my life. Well, I have the great pleasure of singing a little song from Kiss Me, Kate.
Strange dear, but true dear, when I'm close to you dear, the stars fill the sky, so in love with you am I. Even without you, my arms fall about you, you know, darling.
what's on the whatnot near the hat stand in the hall. It didn't seem to grow till one day our brother Joe had a notion that he'd make it strong and tall. So he's crossed it with an acorn from an oak tree, and he's planted it against the garden wall. It shot up like a rocket till it's nearly reached the sky. It's the biggest aspidistra in the world. We couldn't see the top of it, it got so blooming high. It's the biggest aspidistra in the world. When Father's had a snootful at his pub, the bunch of grapes, he doesn't go all fighting mad and getting into scrapes. You'll find him in his bear skin playing Tarzan of the Apes up the biggest aspidistra in the world. The pussycats and their sweethearts love to spend their evenings out up the biggest aspidistra in the world. They all begin meowing when the buds begin to sprout from the biggest aspidistra in the world. The dogs all come around for miles, a lovely sight to see. They sniff around for hours and hours and wag their tails with glee. So I've had to put the notice up to say it's not a tree, it's the biggest aspidistra in the world.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. Biggest aspidistra, so I've got a bump on my lip. She's got a sore lip, a bit of cold, see, when they say biggest aspidistra, I busted again. Well, here we go now with a very new song called At the End of the Day.
At the end of the day, just kneel and say, thank you, Lord, for my work and play. I've tried to be good. All I know that I should, that's a prayer for the end of the day. So when the new day begins to break, just lift up your eyes, let your heart awake. Be ready to meet what the day may send. Be ready to greet every man as a friend. Nobody knows what a power you have found. So do what you can for the others around. Carry them high when they seem to be low. As on your way, just kneel and say, thank you, Lord, for my work and play. I've tried to be good, all I know that I should. That's my prayer at the end of the day. on sovereign brows, beloved renowned. Once more thy crown is set, thine equal laws, thy freedom gained, have ruled thee well and long. Thy freedom gained, thy truth maintained, thine empire shall be strong.
One of Grace's favorite broadcasts, so we've included the whole of her contribution, which brought to an end that wonderful Festival of Variety in 1951. By then, her husband Monty Banks had died, and Grace was trying to forget her loss by taking on more and more work. She also found solace in her home on the beautiful island of Capri.
Where did you choose the Isle of Capri?
Well, I think it's because I like being quiet. I couldn't live in London or any big city. I can't live in New York. I want to come here. I want to get to London immediately, but after I've been a couple of nights, let's get out. Let's go somewhere small, you know, get quiet in the country.
You live there, of course, now with your third husband. Monty Banks died in 1950, after what I'm sure was a very happy marriage.
Yes, it was, very.
You then married Boris Alperovici.
In 1952. This is the longest marriage because actually I've been married twice before. You could say I haven't been with either husband much at all because I was working. I was in one country or they were in another. And in England with Archie Pitt, I was around the provinces, he was in London. But with Boris, since we've been married, we've been together the whole time, touch wood, and I hope that will stay until the end of our days.
Are you a religious woman?
Very, very deeply religious myself.
Is this a family background? Was your family religious?
Yes, but I think I've taken it more on feeling deeper than the rest of them do.
So when you are singing the Lord's Prayer or the Ave Maria...
I feel the words I'm singing. I don't just sing them. I feel the words. I feel every word I'm singing in most songs, but more of those, that kind of song.
Do you ever regret that your success has taken you away from Rochdale, from England?
No, I don't regret it. It hasn't taken me away from England, really, because I feel that this is my home, is England.
Do you miss it? Do you miss the touring, the theatre?
No, I don't want to tour again. I hate getting in trains and packing a bag.
Do you miss not appearing every night in the audience?
Oh, no, not at all, no. No, no. No, I don't miss it at all.
You seem to be so terribly contented with life.
Yes, I am, George. I'm quite contented. I got everything to be contented for. As I said, the bills are paid, and I got a wonderful husband, and I'm very happy and contented.
But do you think that the day may come when we shall see Gracie Fields saying and singing on the stage that now is the hour to say goodbye?
I don't know. I can't tell you. I don't know. I don't know. I haven't accepted anything, as I tell you, because I don't feel sure enough that I'm going to give the right bang, slap, bang up performance, you know?
Is it also perhaps a little that you don't want to say goodbye to it all?
No, I don't like to say goodbye. I hate to say goodbye. All of my songs are, you got to smile when you say goodbye, now is the hour, and wish me luck when you say, wave me goodbye. I'm always doing goodbye things. I don't like saying goodbye. I would say, say au revoir, but not goodbye. Let's leave it that way, eh?
And God bless you, Gracie. Wheresoever in his great universe thou art.
Sometimes, not often enough, we reflect upon the good things, and our thoughts center round all those people we love. And I think about those people who mean so much to me. And for so many years have made me so very happy. And I count the times I have forgotten to say thank you, and just how much I love you, and just how much I love you.
That recording was made when Gracie was 80 at the opening of the Rochdale Theatre named after her. Within a year, she was dead in September 1979. Tomorrow, she would have been 85 years old. That program about Gracie Fields was introduced by Stanley Holloway. News in Brief is next.